It was nearly 10 years ago. The State Department and the UN began placing more than 4,000 children, refugees from Sudan, in cities across this country. These children had been orphaned or they were separated from their parents during Sudan's violent civil war.
They earned the name the Lost Boys of Sudan, but not all of them were boys. 89 of the children sent to live in new American homes were girls. One of those girls is Adwe Riok, who walked 1,000 miles to flee the fighting in Sudan. She wound up in a refugee camp in Kenya for 8 years before she was relocated to Boston.
Pretty much you go to bed worrying of being attacked. And if you made it the next day, you thank God and you move on with your life and, you know, you wait for tomorrow. And when women would go to collect firewood, they had to go deep into the forest, so they have to walk miles and miles. And once they do that, they will get attacked by native. Some women will often be raped, and some will be just, you know, beaten and basically physically abused.
You were going through this as a child. How aware were you of the situation you were in? Did you feel scared or unsafe?
When you live in an environment where everyone else is practically living the same way, it's really hard to separate yourself from the rest. So we all know that it wasn't safe, and I know that it wasn't safe because, you know, people would get shot. And I had a neighbor that was shot, and he didn't do anything wrong. He was just sitting one morning, and boom, bam, you know, came the bullet. But, you know, we went through this massive human rights violation together, but yet, you know, the story sort of like varies, depend on the person and where they were at that particular time. I was too young to do many activities like going deep into the forest to collect firewood, so I was never exposed to fear of being raped and things like that. But, you know, a bullet can get you wherever you are, if you know what I mean. So
there were about 4,000 lost boys of Sudan who were sent to live here in the U.S., but fewer than 100 girls. Why were there so few girls?
The way that the camp was structured has a lot to do with why there were so few girls in the group. When the refugee camp was set up, girls were basically grouped with families, with relatives, distant relatives. And because it's a Sudanese culture, a woman is not allowed to live on their own. So girls sort of like, you know, were sort of like merged into community, which was basically families with little kids and things like that. But boys, now men, they're young men right now, they're no longer boys, they were grouped in what was called minor groups. And when the resettlement agencies were in the camp identifying people for resettlement, they saw these organized groups, which were particularly men, and they could go through a roster and identify their names and their age and what year they arrived in the camp and things like that. So guys were pretty much more organized compared to women, because once they went to the communities, their records were lost. It was really hard to find them now. And since we marry young compared to young men, a lot of girls now were mothers. And the resettlement wasn't designed to assist mothers. They're young men and they do have sisters, right? Where are their sisters? It's a simple question.
When you first arrived here in the U.S., what were your first impressions?
See, the thing is, when I hop on that plane in the refugee camp in northern Kenya, it was November 28th of 2000. And I didn't even look back. I was so excited. I am always eager to learn new things, to go to school, to become a lawyer. It's this pathetic, weird dream that I had in that place.
You wanted to be a lawyer even back then in the refugee camp?
Oh, yeah, I do. I wanted to become a lawyer. It was one of those bizarre dreams that you just have. And I know that the chances of it happening were pretty much 0 to 1%. So it wasn't going to happen, but that's all I have. And when I was boarding that plane, I was like, this is it. My dream is coming true.
Adwe, what do you miss most now about Sudan?
What I miss is just is being where you belong, you know, being home, a place that you can proudly stand up and say, this is my place, this is home. People speak the same language. There are certain things that you don't even need to be explained to you because, you know, you're part of that environment. So those are the things that I miss the most. But, you know, that's life. We don't get everything we want, do we?
Adwe Riak was one of the lost girls of Sudan. She spoke with us from Boston, where she's now working as a paralegal. She plans to go to law school and then return to Sudan to help with human rights. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a profile of Adwe Riak that appears today on the cover of USA Today. That profile was written by Charisse Jones. She joins me now from NPR's New York Bureau. Welcome to the program, Charisse.
Thank you for having me.
As we heard, Adwe says that so few girls were chosen for resettlement, and she says it has to do a lot with how the refugee camps were structured. Is that consistent with what you found in the course of reporting this story?
Absolutely. Gender and circumstance kind of came together to limit the girls in terms of how many survived initially and how many were able to make it to the United States. When they got to the camp in Kenya, the girls were absorbed into families because traditionally girls could not be on their own, whereas the boys and the young men were allowed to live together in these large groups. So refugee officials really did not even know that there were girls, whereas the boys were a very visible, distinct group who clearly needed care and assistance. And there was also concern they might be forcibly recruited by the rebels. And so UN officials said, you know, we've got to get them out of here. And that's why they became the focus for the resettlement effort.
Did you speak with any of the other lost girls of Sudan, and what were their experiences like?
I spoke to several in Phoenix and in the Boston area, and they endured as much as the boys, and even more so in terms of atrocities. A lot of girls were sexually assaulted along the route and in the camp, which is something that is obviously very difficult to talk about. When they came to the United States, they had a disadvantage in that they weren't as well educated as the boys. In the camp, in these surrogate families, they were sometimes treated basically as domestic servants. So they didn't get to go to school. They didn't learn English. So when they came here to this environment, they didn't know the language. They may not have been literate, and they were trying to adapt and at the same time deal with these terrible memories. But like Adwe, they have done remarkable things. Many have gotten their GED. They've pursued higher education. Many of them have married the lost boys, so they have families. They may have a job outside the home as well. So they're real survivors.
You mentioned some of the girls have married the boys. It sounds like their lives in Sudan were so very separate because of their gender. Did you see them kind of coming together and bonding over that shared experience, regardless of gender, once they were resettled?
I think so. I mean, I think that the fact that they've shared this experience, they share a culture, they share a language, makes them seek each other out. And many of the young men, now that they're in the United States, their attitudes have changed towards women as well in the time that they've been in America.
Charisse Jones wrote about the lost girls of Sudan for USA Today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.